episode of My Imaginary University draws on the creative capabilities of Professor Emma Flynn, outgoing Pro Vice Chancellor for Research and Enterprise at Queen's University Belfast, and shortly to start as Provost at the University of Warwick. Emma offers us the most remarkable and fantastical institution, a world university which seeks to recognise the huge power of institutions across the globe to understand and change the world and lives. This university aims to convene the best people from all parts of the world to collaborate, instead of competing, to come up with solutions to the big global challenges. The university's HQ and principal campus can be found sitting above all national and cultural boundaries in a very large space station. Staffed by both permanent staff and visiting or seconded academics and business leaders, and Emma believes that its global collaborative approach will be a real catalyst for success. With a curriculum focused on the UN Sustainable Development Goals and a global research collaborative program and student mobility scheme, it will be overseen by a Nobel Prize-winning chancellor with some astronaut backup. All in all, it's a genuinely out there proposition, which can't fail to take off. And with a real international global anthem from a surprising source, it is sure to succeed in this century, as well as in the 25th with Buck Rogers.
Well, welcome everyone to the latest episode of My Imaginary University. And this time it's my enormous pleasure to introduce Professor Emma Flynn. Emma is currently Pro Vice Chancellor for Enterprise and some other stuff at Queen's University Belfast, but is imminently going to become Provost at the University of Warwick. So welcome, Emma. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks ever so much, Paul. Really, really pleased to be doing this and very, very excited and slightly daunted as well. So
surely not. With your long track record in different universities around the sector, I would imagine this will be a breeze. So let's dive straight into it. So part of the brief is that you've got to create an imaginary university, and it can be any kind of institution. It could be this country. It could be abroad. It could be any kind of institution. So go for it. What have you imagined for us, Emma?
So I've decided, having listened to a few of these, Paul, so I know where it's coming from, and realising that actually a lot of people have come up with some of the best ideas already. So I've gone for something which is really kind of an extreme of some real core values and principles about what it is. So I suppose what I wanted to do is maybe talk about what the premise is of my, and it's a fantasy, it's not even an imaginary university, it's absolute fantasy university. And you will see some holes in what I'm going to offer you. So, you know, I'm not suggesting this is a fully formed idea. So I suppose for me, what I'm offering you is a world university, a WU. Okay, and this is a new idea, a new concept, and it's built on, I think, three really powerful foundations and principles around what I think universities are currently doing and what they are offering to the communities that they are within, but also the global community. So first of all, it's about the power of academia. So I have been in rooms where I have seen the concepts and ideas and the translation of research genuinely changing the world in which they're in. I do think that if you get the right people in a room, that you can move mountains through universities and through the academic endeavor. And I think we are not a profit-making, you know, organizations. We are investing all the money that we make back into these endeavors, and we are doing research with purpose. We are really thinking about what is it that we can do through the academic endeavor, through teaching students, through working with students, through convening with people, and through using our infrastructure to be able to really improve our understanding and of the way that the world works in many different ways. We've seen that recently with COVID. We've seen it with things like inclusive innovation. Me coming from Belfast, I see it in post-conflict reconciliation. So it's, you know, it's really thinking about the power of the academic community. So pulling people from different disciplines together to really think about how they can change the world. The second principle is about the power of the international, and this is why it's the World University. So, you know, cleverness and the ability to be able to make change does not just sit in one place. We have cleverness and fantastic ideas spread all the way around the world. We have universities spread all the way around the world. So it's about the power of convening all of the best people. Now, what I mean by best is, you know, is it's not about the most research income or the highest citation. It's the people who can make the best contributions to positive change within the world, coming together to come up with real world solutions. And the final thing is about collaboration. So there's an awful lot of competition across the global sector, across national sectors, even regional sectors. And it's really about saying, well, let's stop fighting with each other and let's start working together to really make a change, to be able to see that. And this is a quadruple helix that I'd like to offer you. Now, the quadruple helix that I'm offering you is number one, academics. Number two, leaders of business and industry coming together into that discussion. Number three, policymakers, people who can actually put in place and implement the changes that we are going to suggest through our academic endeavour. And then finally, and I think probably the most important, is the civic engagement. And this is informed advocates. This is not opinions. This is not a people who don't like sausages and don't want everybody to eat sausages, or don't like certain types of people living at the end of their street, or believe that, you know, what they think is better than everybody else. It's informed advocates who can talk about gender-based violence, who can talk about homelessness, who can talk about patients' advocacy, who can talk about being displaced through climate change, and really talking about their personal experience potentially, but also a whole host of real people's civic experience coming together. So my fantasy university is a convening institution that draws all of this excellence, both from academic and beyond academia, together. And the curriculum is focused around the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So that's the premise around which I'm working.
Right. A lot to get a teeth into there. A really, really interesting idea, Emma. So couple of basics first then. So given the ambition of the name, right, World University, you know, it's quite a modest premise, isn't it? Are you, and given you're talking about UN SDGs, so are you aligning yourself to the UN in the sense of, if you're going to have a corporate headquarters, are you going to rent out some rooms in UNHQ? What's your thinking about the, you know, the HQ?
So, well, this is where it starts to get into the fantasy world. And I suppose this is where maybe there might be some holes in my plan, and there might be some things where I'm going to have to get ChatGPT to come in and solve all of these problems for me, because it's not always straightforward. But I worry a little about affiliating myself solely with one jurisdiction or one particular agency. I think there'll be lots of agencies who'll be interested within this, lots of cross-jurisdiction funders, lots of, you know, the World Health Organization, the UN, all of these things may well be interested in what we're trying to do, and can be partners within it. In fact, all research institutions, anybody who's doing research and wants to make a positive change in the world, can be affiliated and will be partnered with us. We'll be drawing in from all of these particular places. So where is our headquarters? I'm thinking, I'm going down the lines of sort of Buck Rogers, and I'm thinking about a space station, and I'm going, we shouldn't sit anywhere in the world, because what we want to do is we want to draw people together in a situation and in a place which is not bounded by political ideology or religious ideology or any kind of cultural context which is going to bound those discussions. And we want to rise people above all of that to be able to be having those conversations which are about long-lasting change in a way and in a space that is maybe so. Please don't ask me how we're going to do this sustainably, because it's completely at odds with your premise. Yeah. But the idea of having something which sits above any national boundaries is why it's a world university. Yes.
Right. Okay. Got it. But that's fine. Right. That's fine. But I so we got the HQ literally in space, right? That's fine. And, you know, we'll work on the assumption we've been able to develop a sustainable method of getting it there. And, you know, that actually we've got gravity working and it's, you know, all tickety boo for
I think they had better Buck Rogers. So I think it's possible.
Well, I mean, what better benchmark for you know, educational sustainability is there than Buck Rogers? But that was in the 25th century, and we're not quite there yet. So we, you know, we're not far off. Okay, so we've got the HQ there, right? In terms of then the practicalities of how it operates as an institution. So we've seen that a number of naughty institutions have got people to sign up for them on fractional contracts in order to get hold of their research and to boost their standings in the World League tables. Now, we're not playing that kind of game, but are people affiliated to it, or are people seconded from their host institution? How would it work?
So I think, first of all, what we want to do is we want to have a curriculum which is both based around disciplinary. I don't want people to be walking out and not being able to say, I've trained as a historian, or I've trained as a physicist or an engineer. But as they progress in through that process and they get towards their final ends of their study, so things like their final year or master's courses or PhDs, or even those who want to return and do kind of extended development and training courses that might be short courses, that they will be doing something which is around the themes of the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, you're absolutely right. How do we then staff this? So that's what the structure of the courses would look like. And we would have a 50-50 split. We would have a 50-50 split of staff who are on permanent contracts who are there delivering the teaching. But then we also have these fantastic peoples that are, you know, principally academics, but also industry leaders and civic leaders and policy leaders coming together as well. And in that space, what we will be doing then is to be having panel discussions. It's about mapping out the problem space under these 17 goals. I think the thing I like about the UN Sustainable Development Goals is it's about sustainability, but it also goes into inequality, poverty. It goes into inclusive growth and, healthy economies. So it's looking at social change and economic change and health change, and not just sustainability as well. These things are all interrelated. And so what we would do is we would pick themes that people would be coming and studying and exploring that problem space to come up with solutions in partnership with these academics that would come in. So, you know, at the moment what we do is we have blah 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 from Queen's University Belfast, or from Warwick University, or from Manchester, or from, you know, wherever they are in the world coming in and standing there, and that's absolutely great. But imagine if you had the best people coming together from all over the world, and they would come on secondments or sabbaticals, or they would come in and they would come for a year or 2 years, and they might even come for a week. But as long as they are making some positive contribution to that problem space and the finding of the solutions, they don't need to be. And I think the moral approach to this of collaborating and trying to find real world solutions will hopefully be a real catalyst for people wanting to get engaged.
I mean, you're generating a real sense of excitement about this, and I can see how it would prove really, really attractive to those outstanding scholars who were scholars. So it's like, in a sense, it's like a kind of massive Institute for Advanced Study kind of concept, you know, a kind of worldwide scale. But let me come back to the practical stuff, right? HQ's in a spaceship up here somewhere, right? But presumably you are, you know, in terms of those research collaborations, presumably some of them are in, you know, particular locations where you've got a kind of critical mass of, I don't know, you know, nuclear physicists or historians or whatever it might be, or environmental scientists. Some of them are online, you know, will be engaging online. But I mean, will they presumably be scattered around the globe depending on, you know, where you can get people together and bring people together in whatever configuration you want?
I think this is the power of it, isn't it? That we have so many partners because we are opening our doors to everyone. And this, I would want to push back a little bit on the idea of it's the elitist expert. I don't want this to be the elite experts. I would like them to be involved, but I also want, you know, who is an elite expert? How do we find out who they are and how do we define them? It might not be necessarily the person with the most research income or citations. So I like the idea is it's the people who have the most to bring to solve the problem, and not necessarily that there's some metric that we can tick them off on a list. So first of all, and the fact that we are reaching out around the globe and saying everybody is included means that, you know, and that there will be some, you know, vying of resources backwards and forwards to make this happen. So we would hopefully be able to use our partners' facilities where it's the best facilities for us to use. We will also hopefully be filling gaps and be supporting and developing and extending those infrastructure where we think we want to invest in that. The other important thing to say is it's not just about translating this research and those solutions. It's about discovery science as well, that we will have to say, to be able to solve a problem, we also need to invest more, or we need to know more about this particular space. Yeah. And it may be that that's much, much more at the discovery end than simply we have a lot of information and we know how to make the changes that we would want to make.
Okay. I absolutely get that. And I think what you're suggesting is that the scale of the enterprise is such, the promise is such, that everyone will want to be a part of it. So everyone will want to chip in and give up their, you know, their chemistry lab stroke, you know, magnetic resonance machine, whatever it might be, to help out with that particular aspect of the research program or whatever.
They're not giving it up, though, are they? They're being partners within it.
They're sharing.
They're sharing. They're collaborating. We do that already, don't we? So we already have the EU, Horizon Europe is a really good example of cross jurisdiction coming together and sharing resources and solving problems and not just within an academic setting, but across sectors as well. So there are cross jurisdiction models that we can use to be able to make this to happen. It would be unrealistic in this incredibly realistic model, Paul, for me to assume that we would be able to have our own facilities for everything that we want to do. And also would be a bit of a waste of money, if I'm being honest, because unless a facility is 100% being used all the time, then there's always space and facilities.
Which nothing is.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But I suppose what I was getting at is that you are in a sense relying on that sense of enthusiasm and everyone wanting to be part of the World University in order to unlock all of these underutilized assets across the globe to enable the best people, whatever their backgrounds, to engage with them and come together to use them.
Yeah, well, of course, but we would need a funding model that would allow us to do this. And so we would need the funders to be able to support the funding for these programs of research that we would be doing. And they would fund somebody who might be in South Africa, who is collaborating with somebody in Tasmania, who is collaborating with somebody in Colombia. And I think, you know, we would need to look at how we can have those cross jurisdiction funding models, but also the training and the teaching block grants would also need to follow this as well. So where the students are coming, there would need to be some money that would follow through for those students who would be coming through.
So it's a kind of worldwide horizon plus Erasmus model that you're looking at. That's going to go down well in certain parts of the world.
But it's global. It's global, Paul. It's absolutely global. So it's no longer about Europe. It's about the whole international world and collective coming together. So, it will be about everybody benefiting.
OK, excellent. Right now, so I'm thinking, you know, obviously it's a timetabling nightmare for the people on the spaceship, but I'm sure we'll work it through.
Chat GPT will sort it all out for us. I have full faith.
And thinking of it, you talked up the student perspective and the course offering as well. I mean, obviously it will be a prospectus like no other as well, which will require artificial intelligence just to find the right page, right? But let's imagine that's all doable then. But what about the practicalities of the student experience? Would they again be scattered around depending on, and would they be highly mobile? How would it work from a kind of student perspective?
Well, I think it would be again a bit like with the academic staff and the professional services staff. It would be both a split between those partner models where they would be spending a lot of their time at their partner institution and then coming to us for a final year, and then those students who are spending all of their time on the space station with us all the way through and being trained potentially also remotely by other partners as well. So it would be, and we would be able, I want it to be a proper world university. So I want the student base to be incredibly global and it to be about all those different perspectives coming in. So this, you know, this very highfalutin idea, you could argue that it's very remote from a contextual basis. So I'm, you know, I've done an awful lot of work on place-based innovation and research and enterprise, and, you know, and that power of looking at a city or looking at a region and saying, what is the power within that? I don't want to lose that. What I want is, and that comes through the students and the students, somebody else in one of your previous podcasts talked about the students as partners, and I love that. They are absolutely partners within this. So the problem space will be mapped out by the academics, the industry, by all of the, you know, those, the advocates, the civic advocates, the policymakers. And then the students will come in with their place-based context. Now, their place-based may be geographical place. It may be demographic. Maybe they are interested about how to solve some of these problems from a particular sort of demographic perspective for women, for Black people, for gay people. And that they would be trying to solve those problems from that particular so they will be bringing their context and their passion for that context to the problem space, and they would explore that problem space under that umbrella of these different multiple work streams, which would be, how do we solve, you know, poverty or inequality or gender-based violence or homelessness or whatever it is. But they would then come in and say, well, what is context for this for me for Belfast, or what is the context for me for thinking about this as a Black person? Or so there is, it's about trying to find solutions, real world solutions, through your own endeavor, but within that very complicated problem space.
Okay, I no, that's really interesting, and I do get that, and you get a sense then of how that could play out in lots of thousands of different locations around the world. Let me go back to the spaceship, if I may, because I'd had it in my head when you were describing it that it was essentially a kind of corporate headquarters with academic leadership there as well. But I think you were also describing other activities. How big is the darn spaceship?
How big is the giant spaceship? The giant spaceship is probably quite large. I mean, we will have tennis courts. We will have a student union. We will have restaurants. We will have all of the facilities that you would have on a campus site, as well as having space for people to bring their families, because I don't want people to come along and feel that they can't participate because it's not an inclusive environment in which they are allowed to bring their families onto the spaceship too. However, it's also that there might be that what we could do is also use it as a convenience kind of institution where somebody doesn't want to come to the spaceship. What they'd actually like to do is to go and work with a partner institution on this particular portfolio. And there's a way of being able to think about what is the right space for you to be coming and having your learning experience and solving some of the problems that you would like to solve. So it's a convening as well as kind of offering.
Okay, that's really helpful, because I must admit, I'd when you were describing it we're pretending this is a real thing now, describing it earlier, I was imagining it was almost a wholly distributed set of activities. But what you're saying is that the World University is actually partly a physical space in space, which is not only a kind of administrative academic leadership HQ, but is also the campus, the principal campus of the institution, with its all the facilities you'd expect a campus to have, plus family accommodation, which is fantastic.
It's easy peasy,
and you know, these are the kind of things that Buck Rogers thrived on, that kind of thing. So you've mapped out your quadruple helix, your different attitudes to, you know, curriculum and research. What other, and the fact that we've got a big load of stuff happening in space, what other distinctive features have you not yet mentioned of this great World University?
So it's going to be hard, this, isn't it, Paul? It's quite a hard thing to actually deliver. So I think one of the hardest things will be bringing people together from different perspectives who have different priorities to try to find the solutions to that space. You know, so an industrialist might come in and might want have certain priorities that may well be different from the civic participants, that may well be different from the academic. So I think when we're looking at the governance model and who is going to come and have some oversight to this university, I think what we need to do is be really thinking about the UN, and to be thinking about those diplomatic skills, to be able to, and in terms of things like our Chancellor, who should our Chancellor be? I think it should be written into those who are winning the Nobel Peace Prize that they will have to contribute to this university and to the diplomatic kind of, you know, helping us be able to, and the space aspect as well. I also wonder whether or not we want another operations chancellor who is also helping us understand what it means to live in space. So we'll have Tim Peakes and maybe Chris Caulfield coming in, also being able to provide advice, not just, so it's the diplomacy of managing those complex conversations and the mapping out of the problem spaces and finding real world solutions. And in return for this, we'll be able to write at the end of our year long endeavor and solving homelessness or reducing gender-based violence, recommendations which actually can be implemented, that actually have been pushing those boundaries and thinking about what the right solutions potentially could be and what will work and what won't work.
What happens with the within the UN and indeed on the planet at the moment, there are certain tensions between nations, including nations at war, right? And those are kind of played out in diplomatic fashion on the floor of the UN and at the Security Council as well. How does that all get addressed? Is it your Nobel Peace Prize winners that you are depending upon to broker solutions to these problems?
I think this is a difficult one, and I would definitely have to be some things within the space which we can't do collaboratively globally. So something like, defence and security might not be areas that we would want to be bringing into discussion and to be trying to solve holistically. So absolutely, I think there are some things, but I do think, I know we're being flippant, but genuinely, I think the COVID endeavour showed us that actually there are some things that we cannot do without working more collaboratively together.
But that will be a challenge. Are there rules, right? Are there things that you are going to actively prevent from happening? I mean, obviously, certain things simply can't happen in space because they're physically impossible or indeed dangerous if they do. But are there things that you as a senior leader in the World University are banning?
Okay, so banning, so this is a bit like management speak and I don't like it, and I can, and it's actually also co-opting an absolute thing that one of your previous podcasters and interviewees kind of came in, which was, in the management speak, I would say I'd like people to be solution focused as opposed to problem focused. So, I think in the words of one of your previous podcasters, I think they said, I don't want people to moan. So I think there is, when you are mapping out a problem space, it's very easy to go, here are all the challenges. This is a challenge. This is a challenge. This is a challenge. There isn't enough money. There isn't enough expertise. There isn't enough resourcing. There isn't enough time. There is an endless list of reasons why you can't do things. And that's for virtually everything. And I think the issue is you need to say, well, let's pretend we have enough money. Let's pretend we have enough expertise. We can get the expertise. Let's pretend we can. If we can solve that problem, what is the solution to this problem? So I think I would like people to be very, the whole point of this is to find the solutions. It's about finding, to getting the cleverest people in the world, or the cleverest, the best people for that, whatever context that is, to come together to really genuinely trying to find workable solutions from a context perspective, as well as a sort of theoretical perspective as well. So I think for me, and I will steal the words of your previous podcast, stop moaning about all the things that can't be done, all the problems that there are, and actually focus on that how can we do this if we get the right things in the right space.
But I think that's very much in the spirit of every other aspect you've outlined of this university. So it's entirely appropriate, Emma. So finally, the key question then, and this is possibly the most challenging of the lot, which is, what's the university song? I mean, it's got to be something that captures the imagination of an entire planet. How which song, which tune are you going to choose to represent the World University?
So I thought long and hard about this, Paul. And I think the thing is, space it is so utterly cool. How can you, there are so many cool songs that you can have. You know, you can go with Bowie's, you know, Spaceman. You can go with Elton's Rocket Man. You've got the Beastie Boys, Intergalactic, Planetary. You've got REM's Man on the Moon. But the truth is, though, when the world is leaving you feeling blue, Paul, and when you need someone to count on, when it seems that all your hopes and dreams aren't coming true and they're a million miles away, you need somebody who can reassure you and that you've got to stick together and you've got to, good friends need to be there for each other forever. And it's only through S Club 7 and Reach for the Stars that you really are going to be able to reach for those, you know, reach for those stars, to have those rainbows and to have friendships forever in which you can reach for your dreams and really make the world, you know, the positive place that you want it to be. So it's cheesy enough to appeal for to grannies, to grandkids, to, you know, to be memorable. I'd hope that culturally we'd be able to find, you know, that it would be a hook for people who aren't maybe so familiar with S Club 7. But Reach for the Stars, I think, might be the thing that underpins all of this.
I think you made a very good case for it to be, you know, a genuinely binding global anthem, right? And something that could bring nations together under the auspices of the World University. So I think it's a genius proposal, Emma, and I'm sure it will absolutely fly. Listen, you've set out a really bold prospectus for, you know, a fantastic fantasy university, as you rightly describe it. And it's been great talking to you and to hearing all of these ideas about a university in space, which Buck Rogers would be very at home in. But as ever, there are the nuggets of real value and real seriousness in that, not least the theme song. So thank you ever so much for your contribution to the wonderful world of higher education.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's been really, really fun. And I do think it's maybe a thought experiment in which I've taken principles to the extreme. But those principles are actually of collaboration, of globalization, and of really thinking about solution focused with a kind of cross sector, I think, is really the principles around which I want to work.
Great. Well, thank you again.
I do hope you enjoyed this edition of My Imaginary University. There should be more episodes along soon. In the meantime, you might like to listen to the equally higher education focused podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I talk to senior university leaders, most of them registrars or equivalent, about their careers and various bits of HE stuff. Just Google it to find many interesting episodes to listen to.